Part 1 of a trade deal between the U.S. and China may not be ready to sign next month. That's what one U.S. administration official told Reuters Tuesday. But they did warn this doesn't mean the deal will fall apart. Negotiators are working to finish something for Presidents Donald Trump and Xi Jinping to agree on in November at the APEC summit in Chile. After a nearly 16-month trade war, top U.S. officials have recently said the deal is on track.
Cubans want fridges. Cuba's government needs foreign currency. The solution? A dozen government-run stores now opening in Havana, where consumers can buy white goods if they pay in dollars. Cuba is dependent on goods brought in from outside. And amid an implosion in ally Venezuela's economy and tighter U.S. sanctions, its own inefficient state-run economy has been going through a liquidity crisis.
On behalf of myself and the Boeing Company, we are sorry, deeply and truly sorry. We can and must do better. We've been challenged and changed by these accidents. We've made mistakes, and we got some things wrong. We have not blamed the pilots, and I know that's been reported, but that is not our company position. We are responsible for our airplanes.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It's October the 30th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell. Another business day getting underway. Lots to cover this morning. You heard some of it there in the opening montage from the yesterday's testimony in Congress before senators. The chairman and CEO, the CEO of Boeing, talking about the 737 MAX situation. Dennis Muilenburg in the hot seat there, back in the hot seat again today. There is some news on the China trade deal that could be falling apart. We'll have a little bit of an update on that as well this morning. On the program today, we're going to focus in on a couple of things, the business of food and the business of technology. First up this morning, we'll bring in Jonathan Mays, who's executive editor at Restaurant Business Magazine. Grubhub had a really awful day yesterday. Their shares took a big hit, down 40%, and we'll talk to Jonathan about what happened with Grubhub. Also, Popeye's chicken sandwich is back, and that's part of our conversation as well this morning. We'll bring in Jonathan again in just a couple of minutes. A little bit later in the program, the drones are coming. Probably sooner than later, and Adam Jones is here this morning, Director of Technology at Huge. He's in the PPG Paints green room waiting for our conversation. We'll do that at about 5:38 this morning. We'll talk to Adam about this science fiction that's really becoming reality very quickly in the second segment of the program today. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Futures are pointing toward a weak open on Wall Street this morning. Dow futures are down about 11 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are off just a fraction. Around the globe, in London, markets are lower by about a quarter of a percent, in Germany down nearly a third, but higher in France. The trading day coming to an end in Asia. In Japan, the Nikkei down nearly 131 points, more than a half a percent. In Hong Kong, the Hang Seng down nearly 119, off about a half a percent. In China, stocks are off nearly a half a percent as well, and oil is trading at $55.46 a barrel. The news on the U.S.-China trade situation is iffy this morning. There are a couple of new details that are being worked out, a couple of wrinkles as well. One of them involves the commitment on China by China to buy more ag products from the United States. That's become a major sticking point in talks to end the trade war. Apparently, China does not want to commit to such a large purchase of new ag products from the United States. They want to have more discretion on that. The president, of course, pushing for a large Chinese purchase of American ag products. Also, this morning we mentioned the situation with Boeing. The CEO of Boeing will be back in the hot seat today. A House committee plans to ask why problems weren't found before the 737 MAX planes ever flew. They'll also press Dennis Muilenburg about production, pilot training, and hiding data from regulators. It will be his second congressional hearing. He testified yesterday that he knew about a possible flaw with the flight control system after a deadly crash, but the planes were not grounded until another crash happened 5 months later. Muilenburg says the 737 MAX will not fly again until everyone agrees it is safe. Let's begin this morning with the latest from the restaurant world. A couple of big stories. Yesterday, Grubhub, Chicago-based Grubhub, taking a big hit, and the Popeye's chicken sandwich is back. Jonathan Mace is executive editor at Restaurant Business Magazine and is back with us this morning. Jonathan, good morning. Thank you for being with us on WGN.
Thank you for having me.
I want to begin with Grubhub because it's one that is a big local story as well. Shares off nearly 40% yesterday. What happened at Grubhub?
Oh boy, that was interesting. So what happened was they badly fell short of earnings. They lowered expectations for the year, and then they sent shareholders this very frank and honest letter to that basically said, really in short, that the industry is changing. Said that their new unit or their new their daily average grubs growth in daily average users fell short of expectations and have been slowing down. So what they're saying is that their new user growth has been slowing. They blame somewhat competition, but they also said that the delivery consumer is changing and that there is no longer the delivery consumer is not as loyal as they used to be, and that they're going more towards the deals that many of their competitors are offering. They also said that there's no longer any more innovation in the industry. It was really sort of fascinating. They basically said that the entire delivery industry is changing. And may not be profitable.
Yeah, and investors heard all of that and jumped off the ship like it was sinking.
Yeah, they did. Was it 43% they fell? By quite a bit. And you have a growth business that's saying basically that growth is slowing and. It was a real eye opener for a lot of investors.
You deal with a lot of these companies on a regular basis. You report on them regularly. Is what Grubhub said accurate? Is this really happening in the marketplace?
Well, a lot of us have been wondering, and companies like Domino's have been saying that the economics of the delivery business don't necessarily work, and that. There are a lot of questions going forward about, sort of where this is going to end up, because essentially you have a service that, it's expensive to operate. It's very difficult to make a profit on, and that's especially true when you're throwing out discounts to get customers to use their service. So essentially, if you have a service that you can't, it's difficult to make a profit on, in theory, you can raise prices, to consumers, but as Grubhub said in this letter, consumers are not going to spend, they're only going to spend so much for a fast food meal. And, that's a question. If you raise prices, that will hurt growth, it's a really uncertain situation as to where the delivery business is going forward.
Yeah, and as we're speaking, I can think of a couple of different ads that I've seen recently just about this free delivery from some of these other companies. Taco Bell's one of them. They're giving folks free first delivery, I believe. Burger King is another one. I know McDonald's has done some of that, but Burger King, I've seen they're trying to get people to do the Impossible Whopper, and that's a free delivery if you order that with one of those other services. So there is that competition that is real.
Oh yeah, and Domino's. If you follow Domino's at all, they've been saying all year that these deals that these delivery providers are offering have been taking some of their delivery business, and they've been citing all year all of these deals and saying that this model is unsustainable, that they can't keep doing it like this. and they can't deliver that efficiently because of the way third-party delivery works, where you're delivering from multiple, you know, you have multiple drivers all around, you know, just sort of driving around, and they get an order, and then they go pick up a single order and bring it to another house, whereas someone like Domino's can have a single driver, you know, can have drivers from a single location taking multiple orders to locations nearby. So the third-party delivery model isn't quite as efficient. It can't really get the it can't really get the efficiency that you might hope that they could. But right now they've just been throwing all these deals out there and subsidizing this service to get more business, and that business is apparently slowing down.
Yesterday at the close, Grubhub shares down 43.3%. The final share price of the day, $33.11. It's recovered just a fraction in after-hours trading. The ticker symbol Grub. Jonathan, the ad just has a picture of the chicken sandwich with the words, "I'm back" on it at Popeyes. They're gearing up for this wildly popular sandwich to be back on the menu.
Yeah, and they're bringing it back on Sunday as sort of a kind of a shot at Chick-fil-A, which is not open on Sundays, sort of making something of a statement there. So, yeah, they're bringing it back. They've been working on this thing for the last few weeks, trying to get up enough supplies to be able to make the chicken sandwich, and their franchisees have been staffing up, apparently, in many cases.
Yeah, and the I was just going to say the chicken sandwich has been good for the bottom line at Popeyes too, hasn't it?
Yeah, their same store sales were up 10% last quarter, and a lot of that came during that 2 week period in which they were generating long lines. And we had some. I talked to a couple of franchisees, and one of them said that they were, you know, up like 100% during that period. It was sort of insane. So they're pretty excited about it.
Is this going to be another disappointment for people? Are we going to see this in stores for a couple of weeks, and then it'll be out, and we'll see people fighting in stores again over the sandwich? Or do they have a nice supply of chicken sandwiches this time?
They should have a nice supply of chicken sandwiches. If they ran out again, that would be a major problem. I tend to think that it was sort of definitely a disappointment. The first time, and they worked pretty hard to get enough chicken breast and to get enough buns to be able to supply it this time, and sort of ready for a potential onslaught. Now it remains to be seen whether they'll see anywhere near the same level of interest this time as the last time, but they're certainly ready for it.
I want to switch real quickly while we still have some time here to Starbucks investing in business development, community development here in Chicago, nearly $10 million. What do you know about this story?
So they are investing $10 million into a group of four sort of community development organizations in Chicago neighborhood. Chicago neighborhoods. These are Action Chicago, Chicago Community Loan Fund, Local Initiative Support Group, and IFF. These groups make small loans to help, get people starting small businesses or nonprofit organizations or develop projects in and around, sort of some of Chicago's underserved neighborhoods. So it's a neat little project.
Yeah, 500 loans to small businesses in the city. This all coincides with this big roastery, the Reserve Roastery, that's going to be opening up on the Magnificent Mile. Jonathan, thank you for being with us this morning and sharing your reporting and expertise in the restaurant and food business. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Jonathan Mays, executive editor at Restaurant Business Magazine. You can read his latest at Restaurant Business Online.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Wednesday edition of The Opening Bell. It is no longer science fiction. Commercial drone deliveries are happening now and maybe expanding to a location near you sooner than later. Joining us this morning to talk a little bit about the tech involved here is Adam Jones, Director of Technology at Huge, one of our returning guests here on The Opening Bell. Adam, good morning. Thank you for coming in on this kind of snowy, slushy morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
First of all, before we get going here, remind our listeners what Huge is and what you do there.
Huge is an experience design shop. Basically, we are building the things that people love. Anything from experiential designs to immersive technology, beautiful installations, and day-to-day applications that you may use and not even know that we were involved.
What's an experiential design? What would be an example of that?
So if you've ever been to, say, a convention, or you've been in a pop-up store or a store that has technology that's merged with the place and space that you're in. So maybe you walk by a smart display or a smart window, and it's displaying or interacting with you in a way that isn't necessarily a static design or a static experience. It's actually something that's engaging you in interacting with a product or a brand.
And it does that. There's some technology brought in your phone that will help it do that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So your phone is basically aggregating all that data on you based on sentiment analysis and your interactions with brands, products, photos, geolocation, and other beacon technology that is embedded inside of your phone and your activity. And you're able to get that information to different providers and brands that let you interact with them in a unique way that is tailored to you.
When I was growing up, we would go to the grocery store and there would be a cardboard cutout, and it would be just a picture of somebody there holding some, and there may be like a cardboard thing out and you could take a free sample off of it.
Sure.
We've come a long way in 10 or 20 years, haven't we, in terms of these designs?
Yeah, I think that we've broken through that fourth wall. And things are now are tailored more towards the user. They're centered around your behavior and the things that you're actually wanting. That example that you gave it's a good baseline that is the jumping off point for where we are today. Without those static displays or end caps inside of stores or the manual experiences that people are having, that if that wasn't there, we'd have the data that tells us that actually a user engages in an experience like X or gets excited by Y. So what's really great about that is, though, it feels like it's crawl, walk, run. Without that, we don't have some of these great experiences mm-hmm. and some of these fantastic leaps in faith and leaps in technology that you see today.
Yeah. I mentioned the phones helping do some of this, but it's also kind of watching your eyes. Some of these displays watch your eyes, right?
Yeah.
So if they can tell exactly where you're looking at on the aisle.
Oh, absolutely. So if you're walking down an aisle or you're, say you even pick up an item, right? So you go into a makeup booth or any other type of situation where like you're looking and engaging with a product, and it may give you the option to, as you're checking out, like, oh, by the way, you picked this up. Is that something that you would want? Yeah. And you're like, actually, I would. And so you would then add that back to your cart. There are ways that, you know, unobtrusively or we're not necessarily spying or necessarily using technology to get in front of a user in a negative way. It's engaging them back into a situation that they may have forgotten, or trying to get them to re-engage with something that they think they wanted, but they like changed their mind and context switched, and then they're like, oh yeah, yes I do. It's better than when you go to an aisle and end up getting a Snickers, and you might actually end up getting the product that you needed.
Right. I wanted to get into some of that just to set the table for this conversation.
Yeah.
Of how We're seeing these drones, these companies testing the drones, and it just feels like science fiction and next level stuff that is really happening. And I have to admit, a couple of years ago, I said, "Oh, there's no way we're going to see this stuff is going to be happening that quickly." And here we have these companies. You have Uber, Amazon, and Alphabet, and a couple of the other Wing is, I think, is the Google Wing. Uber Technologies is doing this as well. With this fleet of unmanned aircraft delivering things, CVS is delivering food, are delivering prescriptions. You have fast food being delivered in California. It's happening very quickly.
Yeah. I mean, the any of the things that you could think of that you saw in the Jetsons and Star Trek or Star Wars or any other sci-fi, Philip K. Dick, any of those things that you're thinking of, they will eventually happen because we pretty much, if we think it, we do it. And if you look at the way that society is moving and you look at the advances that we are taking, this is just a natural progression. If you look at just drones in general, less than 600,000 of them were kind of in service just with like the cameras and just toys from Christmas. Like a couple of years ago, now you're looking at over, they project like 3 to 4 million in the next coming years. So with that, people are, they're used to the technology, right? It's kind of like the phone scenario. They see it, they know it, they get it. Now it's, how does this work for me in a way that is good for the user and good for humanity? And there's a lot of great research that's been done. There's a SSRN, which is the Social Science Research Network. You can see a lot of these papers. We don't have time to talk about them because they're extremely long and arduous, but it's a great reference for your, someone that's trying to figure this out and try to understand what goes on inside of this. But I mean, if you think about an average Prime delivery is 5 pounds, okay? So that would be... So it's a 5 pound delivery, and that's 75 to 90% of an Amazon Prime delivery. Well, so they've built a drone to fit that need that can then do a round trip in under 30 minutes that probably doesn't have to have as big of an impact on a fleet driver or the environment. Okay. So, and that's like one aspect. And then if you're looking at Google, and you're looking at Uber Eats, those are also different channels. So they may not be going from the Amazon shipping center to the user. The Google situation may be, oh, I am homebound, I need my medicine sent to me in CVS or Walgreens or whatever pharmacy, latches onto this tethering system, comes to your house, it hovers 25 feet above you, brings it down, drops it off, and away it goes. Amazon has a different type of drone, a different type of situation because of theirs, have electronics and different things. So what we're seeing with this, and you know, in Uber Eats as well, has a situation where they're delivering food. So they want to find the quickest way to get to a car. So they may even land on top of a car, and then that car will take the package and put it in and then and to finish the destination. So you have a lot of different channels and a lot of different user needs for this, which brings in a lot of complexity, which brings in a lot of great, I think, tangential things that will come from this.
Yeah, well, one of those things is, I mean, and it sounds really cool, but 5 pounds, so you're thinking one package per drone delivery. That doesn't sound very efficient, though. I mean, because you see an Amazon driver in the street has a whole van full of stuff, and they're going, you know, from door to door delivering those pretty quickly. How does the efficiency win out here?
So this is the way I take it, and this is the way I see it. So there may be a situation where you see an Amazon driver out. You know, you don't know how many packages they have. But what if, in this scenario, you have an Amazon driver that is maybe has one or two packages, and the route itself is kind of expansive, right? It's a very large route, and the gain you would have on driving, you know, 12 miles out of your way to deliver three things, okay, maybe not be beneficial for the person that needs it on time and the business, which is Amazon, or the delivery that needs to happen. So now, think of a situation where that driver could then streamline their delivery So now you're getting into the logistics of things. So delivery becomes more pragmatic, and the things that can be dropped off, if it's just a package of AAA batteries, right, that needs to go to a user or a person out in the world that wants it by 3 p.m., now I don't have to make that additional stop en route, and I can then take larger packages. Or logistically on the back end, Amazon can find a smarter way to, you know, increase the output of that driver.
So it's something that, again, we may see in the rural area, maybe.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the city where you have a denser population.
No. But I was actually thinking about this the other day, and this is like a tangential outcome of this. So have you ever thought about, so this becomes a thing and everybody starts using it. Now we may rethink about real estate, right? We may think about how we design our backyard to have like a
strong landing zone.
I mean, but that's a real thing, and it's a really cool thing to think about. You know, why are there alley systems in cities? Or, you know, like these things are all outcomes of things that happened, right? So I believe that as drone technology and just our ease of use with a lot of the tech that we're using becomes a thing, the view from the sky for the delivery of these things, or the view from the sky for these companies that are bringing us this technology, may change the way that we actually shape our communities. And actually, maybe it's a design change to the way we shape our home builds and things like that. Or maybe a piece of real estate that wasn't that enticing at one point may become the new hotspot because it's located in the best spot between all of the providers for these different drone technologies.
So from a technology standpoint, you talked about a couple of things here, but I'm seeing weather, people, objects are the big technical things that have to be accomplished. So in the time we have left here, those are the big things that we need to solve before this becomes widespread.
Correct. I mean, like, let's just get to the people part. I mean, just landing in a backyard for any of these drones, right? Or any of these situations. So you have to have a safety sensor, thermal, you have to have diverse object detection, sonar, etc. I mean, you're looking at the algorithmic just muscle power in this thing to be able to say like, oh no, that's a fluffy dog, I can't land there. And just that alone, okay, and then that's a real thing. Like,
I know. Yep.
You know, like, if a fluffy dog if it can't be detected, it could be landed on, and that could cause a problem. So, I mean, like, the amount of just the technical lift for that is just, it's so immense that, like, the outcomes of that, though, I think we will have smarter, better cities. It may help law enforcement. It may help lots of different areas that I think that, you know, this is going to have a lot of cool kind of the duct tape situation where like NASA made this and now it's going to be a thing that we're going to be using. I think that we're actually going to gain a lot more from this close space race that we're having, you know, in our own airway.
So are we going to look up in the sky and it's going to be like a scene from Star Wars where all the drones are flying up in this, you know, back and forth?
You know, again, the regulations and the government's going to step in, but I think that because they can go at 400 feet, I don't think that you're going to notice that big of a difference. It's going to be no different than seeing a goose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, Adam, it's always good chatting with you, and you kind of bring a little bit of technology and futurism to a program. We appreciate that.
I love it.
Thanks for coming in this morning and dealing with all the weather and stuff like that, and please come back and see us sometime.
Oh, I will. Happy Halloween.
Same to you. Adam Jones from Huge in Chicago, where he's director of technology. You can find them online at hugeinc.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a flat open on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures are flat. S&P futures are up just a fraction. Same story over at the NASDAQ. After a mixed day in Europe and a generally negative day in Asia, where markets were as low off nearly 100 points in Tokyo, off more than 100 points in Hong Kong. Let's get an update now on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Yesterday, we saw corn and soybean futures mixed at the Chicago Board of Trade. as an advancing U.S. harvest curbed price gains while traders kept waiting for further developments in U.S.-Chinese trade negotiations. Wheat edged higher for most of the session with support from an Egyptian import tender that put the focus back on global demand and rising export prices. At the end of the day yesterday at the Board of Trade, the December wheat contract down just a quarter of a cent a bushel, while December corn gained 2.25 cents a bushel, and November soybeans dropped 3.75 cents a bushel. Livestock futures, Chicago Mercantile Exchange, again, the debate on that Chinese-U.S. trade agreement looking great today and then not so great tomorrow is continuing. And the live hog futures slid yesterday because of conflicting news about those trade talks. But so far, beef demand is showing no signs of quieting, and that helped the cattle market in yesterday's trade. That's Agribiz for today. I'm Orion Samuelson. Have a great day.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Wednesday, October 30th. The ADP jobs numbers for October lead off today's economic reports. Analysts see about 150,000 new jobs created. The advance on third quarter GDP growth is due out as well today. Experts forecasting a 1.9% growth rate. The Federal Reserve expected to announce a 0.25% rate cut at 1 o'clock Chicago time today. On the earnings calendar, Molson Coors, Yum Brands, Apple, Facebook, Lyft, and Starbucks all reporting quarterly earnings. The Boeing CEO back before Congress. Just a couple of things that could move the markets on this Wednesday, October the 30th.